Let's turn in our Bibles, please, or maybe you have it memorized. 2 Timothy 1:7. 2 Timothy 1:7. And I have it memorized, but I'd like someone to read it, someone with a good reading voice. You know who you are. They ask you to read here in the church is because you can be heard. So I appreciate that. That designated person would would read. Okay, everybody's looking at one person. So 2 Timothy, the last letter that we have a record of Paul writing in the New Testament. He's in jail. He doesn't expect to come out except to be led out about 6 miles outside the Ostian Way, outside of Rome, and kneel down and be beheaded. And the imagery of beheading is in the passages there. It talks about giving his life as a pour offering, like they would take the wine and pour it in the dirt. And he uses that imagery in his letters to Timothy. So we think he's expecting to bow down and have his head be decapitated and have his blood go into, and he's thinking of that as his sacrifice, his pour offering to the Lord. So he's anticipating his upcoming death. And so this is a very precious few words he has to write to Timothy. So think about that. There might be some tears mixed in with this ink as it's taking a little longer to dry on this parchment he's writing. So think about this as you read 2 Timothy chapter 1, verse 7.
2 Timothy 1:7. For God hath not given us the spirit of fear, but of power and of love and of a sound mind.
Okay, think about this verse for a minute. He's writing to Timothy. He wants to see Timothy earlier in a chapter. He's talking about he's longing to see Timothy being mindful of his tears. Timothy's crying for him. He's heard Timothy's been crying for him. And he wants to see Timothy one more time. Not so much that he needs Timothy, but if you're going to be gone, leaving this world, that's an emotional moment for you. And the support of your friends and the company of your friends, I'm sure, is important. But it seems all of this letter is Paul's concern about Timothy. After all, he's going to be with the Lord. But Timothy is going to be left with the work. And the question in Paul's mind is, all the things we've worked for, all the things we've striven for, what's going to happen after I go? Is Timothy going to continue with the work, or is he going to be depressed? He's been a great assistant pastor. I have even been able to send him back to Berea and other churches that we've just little studies we've got in the dead of night. He snuck back into town, and he's come back a month later and helped establish the work. So he's a brave guy. He can work independently, but he's always worked independently under the direction of Paul. Paul's always like, Paul talks to God. Paul does miracles. Paul has risen some people. What was that boy's name? Eutychus, that fell out of the church window after a long sermon? And that way we have scripture to prove that the sermon should be long enough to put you to sleep. It's in the Bible. If you're falling asleep, that means the sermon was just as good as Paul's because it put somebody to sleep. Well, he fell out of that window, and Paul touched him and prayed him, and he was healed or raised from the dead. I forget exactly. But the point is here, Paul could speak all these languages. I'm sure Timothy could. His father had a Greek father and a Jewish mother, so he probably spoke the main languages of the day and proved a good assistant for Paul. So he was intellectually good. He was young. But pretty much, he was doing what Paul told him to do. Now, it's one thing to be an employee. It's another thing to be the owner of a business, isn't it? Because if you're an employee and nobody comes in the store all day long, what do you think? Do you care about that? As long as you get your paycheck, you don't care. But what if you're the boss? What if you're the owner of the business? How do you feel when nobody comes? That's like your baby. When your business fails, I don't know if you ever had a business. But if you have a business or something you're trying to get going, if that business dies, it feels like somebody in your family died. Because it's intimate. It's personal. It's personal. Well, this was even more personal because Paul had been in the ocean a couple times. He had been stoned. He had been beaten. He had seen God work to establish these churches. And what was going to happen? Was Timothy going to keep with the work, or was he going to become discouraged? Later on in chapter 4 of the same epistle, I believe it's in verse 5 where Paul tells Timothy, do the work of an evangelist. Do you recall that? Maybe I'm making an allusion to it now. But why would Paul give these commands in the Bible? Let me ask you, why is something a command? If you have a teenager and you say, clean your room, why would you say that? Or if you turn to your daughter's talking to somebody on the phone and you say, and you're going to bed, you can say, okay, don't go to bed too late. Why would you say that? Because if, on the one hand, the room's messy, it needs to be clean. Or you know from past experience that if you don't say something, she might be on that phone at 3 a.m. You know there's a need there. The person's character or the situation demands that you say something. Okay, to make sure, maybe the person was going to hang up at midnight. Maybe the room was going to get clean by itself. Maybe the teenager was going to say, you know, I had to clean my room. Maybe that was going to happen. But there's just enough doubt in your mind. You feel you have to say something. Go on record of having said it. So Paul, maybe Timothy was going to be just fine. But you know, he might not ever have a chance to talk to him again. And so he says, Timothy, do the work of an evangelist. Why? Timothy, he also says, bodily exercise profiteth little. Right? So what does that mean? Timothy's a young Greek. What did the Greeks invent as far as athletics go? The Olympics. They're famous. They're famous for that kind of stuff, right? Timothy was a Greek. What do you think his father raised him to do? Wrestle, you know, run, throw the javelin, all those little Greek. In fact, you had to win some kind of contest to be a citizen in the Roman Empire, you know. Of course, the rich people paid a bunch of slow runners so their kid could beat them. But basically, they didn't want wimps in the empire. You know, you had to win something. You had to show that you were worthy. And so that was a common practice to rig games. But anyway, that just shows you it was an important part of the culture. Rigged or not rigged, it was something everybody did. So I think Timothy could have, you know, hey, friendship evangelism. I'll spend some time at the gym. You could easily justify, I'll do what the pastor says, and when I'm done, I'll go to the gym and work out, and I'll witness to the people, you know? But his focus was on compliance with his leader and then doing what he wanted to do. So Paul's thinking, when I go and I'm not here anymore, maybe he's going to spend all his time at the gym and not do evangelism. I'm the evangelist and he's the helper. I'm the pastor, he's the assistant. I'm the prophet and he's the son of the prophet, so to speak. So when I go, is he going to keep in that assistant role where he's comfortable? Or is he going to step out and do the work of an evangelist that needs to be done? Because when I'm going to go, who's going to do the evangelism? I was the evangelist on the team, but when I go, evangelism needs to be done. The church needs an evangelist. It doesn't matter if you're an evangelist or not, does it? How about if you're anybody in here own a business? Ever owned one? Okay. What kind of business do you own? What's that? Fish something?
Taxidermy.
Okay. Well, I'm afraid I cannot come up with an illustration based on that job. But I was thinking more in the terms of restaurants. Okay, so I'm going to use that example because it came to my mind. Sorry about your fish taxidermy. I could not plug it better. But anyway, I'm thinking of if you have a whole bunch of clients at once and they all leave simultaneously and all the tables are messy and there's not enough busboys to do the work and you're the boss, what are you going to do? You're going to grab a rag, right? And you're going to do the lowliest job. What if there's no toilet paper in the bathroom? What are you going to do? You're going to run and get the toilet paper. You're going to do, if the toilet stopped up, you're going to go get the plunger. It doesn't matter, hey, I'm not the plumber. I'm not the busboy. I'm not a waitress. I'm not the cook. It doesn't matter. It's like when the boat's sinking, if you can stick your finger in and block the leak from coming in, you do it. It doesn't matter if it's your job or not. All hands on deck. You know, it's like a war or a business, to use that example. So, you know, Paul's leaving, and he didn't say, Timothy, you know, you're an evangelist. You're a great evangelist. Just use your gift. He doesn't say that. He says, do the work of an evangelist. In other words, do the work of somebody that's not like you. Well, till when? Well, the work needs to be in. Maybe somebody better comes along, you can step aside. Or you can train them because you've been doing the work. Now you got experience. But you know, the work needs to be done whether you got the skill or not. So just do it. All right? So, but how's Timothy going to do that? You know, before he's only had one thing to do, follow Paul. That makes life easy. If you fell down a well shaft, what would God's will be for your life at that time? Would you have to pray about it a lot? What would you do if you're down at the bottom of a well shaft? Things to do. That list would be very short. Get out of the well shaft. You could holler for help, carve some steps, try the cell phone one more time. That list would be very short. But your goal in life would be, you have one direction, that'd be straight up, right? But what happens if you're out of the well shaft and you're on flat ground? How many directions are there? In mathematics, how many directions are in a circle? How many degrees? 360. You have 300, you're facing one way, so you've got 359 other directions you could be going than the one you're going now. Well, am I going the right way? Or maybe I should go this way? Now there's a... Timothy didn't ever have to worry about that. There's Paul. Follow Paul. Paul says this and do it. Now it's like, it's all on me. Pastor, should we build or should we rent? Should we have a service here? Should we go over there? What should we do, Pastor? Where's Paul? He's not here anymore. What if I make the wrong decision? It's all on me. Then I'll get the blame if it doesn't work out. Can you imagine being in a position of leadership and having to make a decision? And what if it goes wrong? Or what if it's the right decision and nobody likes it? Or what if it's the wrong decision and everybody likes it? And you get a lot of mileage out of it. And it's like everybody climbs the ladder with you. And at the end, you find out it's leaning against the wrong wall. Yeah, now you're in the wrong place. And you got to start over again somewhere else. So that could be bad too. So I think Timothy had these issues. So how was he going to, maybe he was paralyzed. Maybe he couldn't do the work of an evangelist like he should. So Paul gives him this medicine. And what kind of, Paul says, you can do it. He's encouraging him to do it. And he gives him three ways to overcome his fear. For God has not given us what? Okay, that means, that spirit of fear you have? That paralyzing fear? That fear that keeps you from doing evangelism? You know where that's from? It's not from God. That doesn't come from God. He's not denying it. He's saying, you don't have anything to be afraid of. He's saying, he acknowledged the fear. Okay. Janice is a very brave person. But have you ever felt fear, Janice? You been afraid to talk to anybody? She's never been afraid to talk to anybody. Okay. Well, I have some very scary people I can introduce you to. Okay. That might help solve that. But sometimes you can be very afraid and it can paralyze you. Right? So, Paul is recognizing the fear, but then he's saying, just realize what I have inside me that's keeping me from doing the work of an evangelism, the work of missions, from giving my church what it needs to grow, that thing inside me is not from God. If it's not from God, well, we'll just leave it there. It's not from God. It's from somewhere else. The not God part of you. Okay? So, instead, God has not given us the spirit of fear, but what does that mean? Instead of the spirit of fear, this is what God has given you. And so you got the sickness. Now open the medicine cabinet of God, and here's three little pills, all different colors. They come from God. You take each one of these, and you overcome this sickness of fear that's keeping you from giving the church what it needs to get the job done. And what are these pills? What's the first one? For God has not given us the spirit of fear, but of power. Paul, Pastor, I don't have the power. I don't have the educational power. I don't have the financial power. I don't have the charisma to do it. I just don't have the power. I can't get out of bed hardly in the morning. How am I going to... I don't have the physical power. But what does God say? God has given you what you need to participate in his work. He has a job for every member of the church, has a function. Just like every member of your body is doing something for the good of your body right now. Right? For the good of the whole. And you might know, people say, well, yeah, what about your appendix? Well, guess what? God put your appendix in there for a reason. And just because you don't know what it's doing doesn't mean it's not doing its job. All right? Okay. How many vitamins are there? A, B, C. You know, there's a lot of vitamins. Why do they have letters A and B and C? Why do they have letters like that? Because they discover one and they call it A. Then what? A couple years later, they discover another one. They call it B. Now, oh, you saw something in the store that said a vitamin F. Never heard of that. Just today. I don't know if they discovered it or that's just some sales gimmick in the store. But you know what? What does that mean? Did they discover the vitamins all in one day? Did they? So how do we know there's not a couple more vitamins out there they haven't discovered yet? A couple of years from now, they discover a new vitamin every couple of years or whatever. Every decade or something, they might discover a new vitamin. And how do you know you've been taking? If you've been taking your one-a-day vitamins, they didn't put it in there because they didn't know about it. So there's all kinds of things going on in your body you don't know about that's essential for the health of your body. You're just unaware of it. So you have a gift. You have a place in this church. Even if all you do is come and sit in the same place every Sunday, and the pastor says, if nobody else comes, I know they're going to be here. Do you ever have somebody like you, say, oh, at least they're here. I can always count on them. And they cheer your heart. And so you can be an encouragement to the pastor. You don't even know about it when you come and stake out your territory and you sit in your place you always sit. Just that is a good thing. But, you know, maybe God's given you more to do and you need to get about doing it. So God says, God has not given us a spirit of fear, but a power. He's given us all the energy we need to get the job done. But pastor, I'm looking at my fuel gauge, and it's on E. And I'm waiting for it to go on F. And as soon as it gets to F, then I'll get off of this couch and I'll do something for God. I'm going to wait for the feeling of energy. I'm going to wait for see my bank account go zoop way up there. And then when it hits a certain number, then I'll serve God. What does the verse say? For God has not given us the spirit of fear, but someday will give us the power. Does it say that? What does it say? But power. And he has given us the power already. You have it. You have what you need right now to participate in God's work and give the church what it needs to get the job done. You have right now that thing. But I don't feel I have the power. Well, you ever have a power drill and you're going to go to the job. And you're going to drive to the job site to use your power drill. Do you get a really long extension cord and you plug it in and you feed it out away from your house? Is that how you do it? What do you expect to find at the construction site? Where are you going to use your drill? What do you expect? A power source, right? Someplace you can plug in and get the power you need. It's at the work site. The power is provided at the place where you're going to do the job. Okay, if the pastor asks you to teach Sunday school or to teach a Bible verse, a memory verse in junior church, or he asks you to, you know, weed the garden or something, whatever it is, you think, well, I don't know I can do that. I don't know I can do it. I don't have the power to do it. Well, where are you going to find the power to do it? Sitting in your house, worrying about it? You're going to find it right standing in front of those kids with that memory verse. You're going to find the power comes online when you're at the job site doing the job. Okay. Somebody said, well, I don't have the social power. I don't have any friends. Or maybe some of the young people want to get married before they go to the mission field. You know where God's wife is for you? He's between where you are right now and the mission field. You know? And if you stay where you are, you're not going to find her. Okay? So God has what you need to get the job done between where you are now and that job site. You just head on out there to do the work. It's already been provided for. Just go out and do it. So God has not given us a spirit of fear, but a power and of love. Wow. How does love make somebody overcome fear? Well, can you think of a timid animal that's really scared a lot? Okay. I'm thinking right now of a little rabbit. The little rabbit. And is there anything that would make a little female little bunny brave? How about if she had some babies and a fox came? Do you think that mother would just hop away and let the fox eat her babies? They could fight to the death. A little meek animal like that. Well, why would they do that? Why would they risk their life? because of that maternal instinct, right? A woman will do amazing things, brave things. A timid woman will do amazing things to defend her child. And is there anything that we should love in God's work? Is there any love that we have as a Christian? Who do we love, or who should we love? We should love God. We should love our neighbors as ourselves. We see the sacrificial love. We follow Christ's example. He gave his life for the sheep, the lost sheep. And there's a lot of lost sheep out there. So we have all the emotional motivation we need from God right now to get the job done. Just remember the love. Remember what Jesus did for you. Remember the sacrifice he made for you. Remember that emotional commitment on his part. You have all the love you need to have all the bravery you need to get the job done, to get out there. Love the lost. Love them like Christ loved them. Or at least love Christ or honor his love for them so you can get the job done. Even if you don't have their love personally, honor his love for them. Now, we've covered two. God has not given us a spirit of fear, but of power and of love and of a sound mind. Pastor, I'm not smart enough. I can never memorize those verses. I can't do evangelism. I can't memorize the Romans row. I can't do that. The Kennedy evangelism explosion method. Woo, what a big outline that is. All right, this or that. Or, you know, there's always some reason. I can't learn another language. You know, I mean, I don't even know English. How can I learn Spanish? How can I learn Japanese? How can I learn Korean? Let me ask you, you know, well, I was in Costa Rica about 2 weeks, and I saw a television set on, and Fred Flintstone was on TV, and he was speaking Spanish. And if Fred Flintstone can learn Spanish, so can you. Come on, let's be realistic. And, you know, there were little two-year-old kids in Costa Rica speaking Spanish. Little two-year-olds. And little two-year-olds, you know, two-year-olds aren't very smart. They don't go to school or anything, you know. But little two-year-old Chinese speak Chinese. Can't you be smart as a two-year-old? You know, well, what do they have that you don't have? Well, they don't have anything else to do, and they probably spent 1,000 hours babbling until they said one thing right and mom gave them a cookie. And so they went from there. Well, maybe that's what you need to do. But, you know, God can give you the brain power you need, and sometimes you don't feel you got it, but you have it already. There's a story of a man, a pastor, that was very embarrassed with one of his church members. And this church member would always say something like, he was mentally challenged, is the correct terminology today. I'll put it that way. He's mentally challenged. And when somebody would come to the church, this man would go to the back of the church and meet them, and he would say, "Are you saved? If you're not, you're going to go to hell and fry like a sausage." And he would say that to every person that came in the church. And the pastor was very well educated, seminary graduate. He had classes in counseling, psychology, very diplomatic. And he would never say anything like that, so he was very embarrassed. Well, one day, a doctor came to his church, a medical doctor and his wife. And the pastor was kind of, wow, wouldn't it be great to have a medical doctor as a member? And he was hoping he would impress the doctor with his sermon. He preached his heart out. And at the end of the service, the doctor walked down and shook the pastor's hand. And the pastor said, "What brings you here today?" And he said, "There's a guy in the back said I was going to go to hell and fry like a sausage. And I don't want to do that. So I'm here to get saved." And, you know, it would have never occurred to the pastor to talk to that doctor that way. But that's just what he needed to hear. And God is sovereign, and he had arranged that appointment for that doctor to hear what he needed to hear. And there was a guy back there. He didn't know much. If he was an 8-cylinder car, he was firing on two. You know, but, you know, that was enough to get the job done that day. And so the same with you. You know, I don't know what to say. I can't go over there and talk to that person. Just walk over there. Just open your mouth and stick your foot in it. And see what happens. Have some fun with it. God's going to get some pleasure out of that, you know. He used a donkey. He used a donkey. He used a rooster crowing to convict Peter and bring him to tears. Are you smarter than a rooster or a donkey? Maybe not. But God can make a miracle out of those two dumb animals. He can make a third one and get something of a value out of you if you open your mouth and make a noise. Does that make any sense to you people? Okay, now how does all fit in with my testimony? I was saved when I was 16. I was at an extra neighbor's house. He invited me over to his house for dinner, put an evangelistic crusade on television, and afterwards took out the Bible and tries to squeeze the sinner's prayer out of me. But I thought, you know, my mom told me, even if you have to kill somebody, there's no excuse for rudeness. Always be polite. And so I figure, I'm a guest in his house. I will pray just because he wants me to. So I prayed with him, but then I looked at him in the eyes and I said, nothing's changed. I don't want you to be deceived. I prayed with you because I'm a guest in your home, and I've always been taught to be polite, and I've done what you asked me to do. But don't think that I've made a decision here. I told him that. And he said, well, let me tell you about assurance of your salvation. And he began thinking, well, I said the magic words, so I must have the spiritual fairy dust on me, and I must be okay. You know, so he began giving me an assurance, but I had not made any internal decision. But on the way home that night, I was walking home, and I began thinking, did Jesus die, you know, for the world? And I thought, well, the world's all messed up. So it didn't work. Even if he did die for the world, it didn't work. That's how I always thought before. So it didn't do any good, so why should I pay any attention to this? But then I remember he said, everyone has to make their own decision. It's individual. And that's why we say personal decision in the plan of salvation. It had to be personal. So on the way home that night, I thought, I don't know if everybody has sinned, but I know I've sinned. And I don't know if Jesus died for the whole world and it's going to work for the whole world. But what I learned tonight was it can work for me. If I respond to Jesus, I've been shown in the Bible, he'll respond to me in a certain way. And so I don't know about the whole world, but I know from what I've seen that it's up to me to make the decision. And then I thought, is it true? And as I touched the doorknob on my house at night, I thought, it's true. I believe it. And I think that's where I got saved. When it became real in my heart, I really believed it. Because I remember thinking, when I get in this house, what am I going to do? Because my dad's going to try to stop me. And I realized my whole life had changed right then because I knew I was going to live different. I just knew it. And so I started reading my Bible under my covers with a flashlight. And why did I do that? Why would you read a Bible or a book, any book, under the covers with a flashlight? Fear? You're afraid somebody's going to stop you. And then later on, I got a little bolder. And I knew I should take a Bible to school because the pastor was always talking about witnessing. And how am I going to witness without a Bible and all that? So I took this little New Testament and I hid it in my pants. And during school, when there's a break, I would sneak out to where the kids would smoke when the teachers wouldn't catch them. And I would open my Bible there and read a verse and hide it real quick. Why would I do that? I wanted to obey God, but I was afraid to. And one day, I asked my parents to get me a Bible for Christmas, and they got me a big old Scofield Bible. The biggest one. Like, that was a $35 Bible, Pastor. And in 1972, that was a big Bible. bought you a big Bible. So anyway, I got this big Bible, and I carried it to school, but at the last minute, I throw a sweater over it so nobody would see it. And then finally, one day, in just a fit of holy boldness, I don't care what they say, I'm going to bring this Bible. And I carried the Bible, and one of the kids said, teacher, why does that kid have a Bible? And then the teacher says, well, ask him. And how come you got a Bible in school? And I said, so I can read it. And the teacher said, well, there, you got your answer. And so I overcame that moment. That was my moment. Later on, a school administrator, assistant principal, came up to me. You can't carry a Bible in this school. There's a separation of church and state. We don't allow the students to carry Bibles around our school. And he's told me that. And I didn't know what to say, but I opened my mouth, and I said, sir, is there a Bible in the school library? And he said, yeah. And I said, well, that was bought with taxpayers' money. He said, well, that's different. And I said, this Bible I hold in my hand, could this be the Bible from the school library? And he said, well, it could be. And then I said, until the school gets rid of its Bible in the school library, don't talk to me about carrying my Bible. And he went, and he shut his mouth, and he walked away. And as soon as he walked away, my knees turned to jelly, and I almost fell down. Because I had used up all my boldness for about a year. And I just like, oh, but I said it. And I was just amazed when his mouth went, oh, just shut and he walked away. Another time I heard a dirty joke in a classroom and I overheard it, and it was funny. And it caught me by surprise, and I laughed. And somebody spun around and said, "You're a phony. You're a phony." And I said, "I'm not a phony." And he said, "You laughed at a dirty joke." And I said, "I know it was dirty, but it was really funny." That doesn't mean it's not funny, you know. And he said, "Oh, you're a phony, because a Christian wouldn't laugh at a dirty joke." And I thought, oh man, now they're thinking I'm a phony. So our school invited a rock band to come, Nitty Gritty Dirt Band. You ever heard of them? Our high school had 5,000 students. They paid for this band to come and entertain the students in an assembly. Well, they came, they sang. They sang a song. They sang another song. They had an anti-Christian comedian. He made fun of pastors and Christians. Then they had another song. You know, it's ungodly, unspiritual. And I thought, when am I going to ever stand up and be like Daniel and do it? And after about, I kept thinking, well, maybe it'll be better later. Maybe it won't get any worse. But finally, I stood up and I walked out. Somebody grabbed me. They maybe go to the school, the dean of man or whatever. I sat with him in the office. I told him all I felt, that was about drug, sex, and revolution. It was anti-Christian. They were mocking my faith. He listened to me. He gave me a little card. It said, if I heard anything offensive to my faith or beliefs, I could get out of any class anytime I wanted to, as long as I went to the school library and they knew where I was. And I showed all the students in the school get out of school class free card. Anytime I felt like it, I could just show it and just leave any class when I wanted to. And all of a sudden, they wanted to have convictions too. But, you know, the Lord used these moments. I joined a debate team because I was so afraid to talk to people. I ate lunch at my high school 2 years by myself on a little bench outside the cafeteria because I was afraid if somebody sat next to me, what would I say to them? That's how afraid I was. I had sore necks from staring out the school bus window so I wouldn't have to talk to the people next to me in the bus. I was terrorized talking to people. I joined the debate team at my high school. Why? Because I read God wanted me to be a witness to the lost, and how was I going to be a witness if I couldn't talk to anybody? And that's kind of like, if you want to lose weight, joining the Marine Corps. That's kind of the strategy. But I had to do something. How was I going to obey God? But you know, God honored that. And our debate team did real well that year and got a trophy for it. And the Lord used these things to bring me out. And I remember going to Mexico and seeing a Mexican walk by me. And I was so afraid. I was on the street by myself with this Mexican guy in his country. You know, I'm ashamed to say, I put my hand on my wallet. Somebody ever walked by you and you were afraid and you made sure where your wallet was? And I realized I had insulted him. That was like accusing him of being a thief. A man just walking down the street in his own country, and I was afraid of him. And I was ashamed of myself. And the next day, I walked over a mile from the church I was in Mexico by myself, down the street by myself, and had breakfast by myself in a Mexican restaurant where I didn't speak the language, and I came back. And I thought, God, if somebody kills me, they kill me, but I don't want to be afraid anymore. I'm just sick and tired of being sick and tired and being afraid. And so I came back from that, and from then on, I wasn't afraid to walk around that town anymore. But what am I saying? What, did I have the spirit of fear? Oh, I certainly did. But God gave me the power, little bit by little bit, to get over it. He also gave me the love for him and his work. I didn't want to dip, Pastor. I talked about the Kennedy Evangelism Explosion Method. I studied that for about 13 weeks with a group of people, about 22 students. The last day of class, the teacher said, "I have a surprise for you. Next week, instead of studying this anymore, we're going to go out and do it." The next Sunday morning, I was really hoping I would be sick. I coughed. Maybe my throat's sore. Maybe I got a sore foot. Maybe I got a fever. And I was so disappointed I couldn't find anything wrong with me. And I thought, you know, but I still didn't. I didn't memorize the outline. I didn't memorize the illustration. But then I thought, you know, if I don't come, I just imagine seeing the look of disappointment on my teacher's face. He would think, "Where's Steve? Is anything wrong?" And I realized I didn't want to disappoint. I cared enough about my Sunday school teacher. I didn't want to disappoint him and have him disappointed with me. I didn't want to sadden him. So I dragged I thought, well, I'll just confess my stupidity. I'll confess my lack of preparation. And I'll just go anyway. And I'll ask if I can just carry his Bible and pray with him silently while he witnesses. I'll humiliate myself before him with that confession. So I went to church, and I went in. It was the teacher and me. None of the other 22 students came that day. I was the only one that showed up. And the other students had their verses memorized. They had passed the test. And I didn't even take the test because I knew I wasn't going to pass it. And why was I there and the other students not there? Because I love my Sunday school teacher more than my personal pride at that moment. And I'm telling you, people, why aren't you witnessing like you should? Is there any evangelism that needs to be done here? Is there any work that needs to be done in the church? Is there somebody you can think of in your world that you could speak to about Jesus? How come that hasn't happened? Why isn't it happening? Aren't you a little bit like Timothy? Aren't you a little bit afraid? Isn't that spirit of fear keeping your mouth shut when it should be open? What are you going to do about that? That's a problem. Paul wrote a commandment in the Holy Word of God to overcome that problem, to solve that problem. There's a verse in the Bible just for Timothy to get over that problem he had. You know, that verse is for you too. For God didn't give you that fear you have that's keeping your mouth shut, that pride you have that's keeping yourself from humiliating yourself. That's not from God. God says, you know what? You can do it. Do what the church needs to have done. I've given you the power, the ability. I've given you the love. I've given you the emotions. And I've given you the brain power, the sound mind, and the mental fortitude, and in the dominio proprio, okay, that means the personal discipline in order to get the job done. Okay, so what are we going to do? Shouldn't we take our medicine? Could the church be healthier than it is now? Maybe we need our medicine and we maybe need our vitamins, but they're right here. Power, love, and a sound mind. It's from God. It's for you. It worked for me. Take some today. Your church will be thankful for it if you do and participate and give this church the service it needs to get the job done.